Hey, it's the Rule of Threes podcast. I'm Chris Grace.
And I'm Casey Lawrence.
Again, we are long distance. I'm full of birthday cake, Casey.
Ooh, congratulations. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. You know what? I've had a pretty good birthday this week, considering all the games have gone exactly as I want them to go.
Oh, my gosh. I was wondering if we were going to be recording after just game one, or if we were going to get game two in there. And lordy, lordy, did we get a birthday present for you in game
two. Oh, my goodness. You know, down 0-2. I mean, both series are going wonderfully, in my opinion. Let's have them both sweep out, and then we'll have a fun anointment of the Golden State Warriors as repeat champs.
Here's the thing, though. If they both sweep out, that means we won't get to watch any basketball for a long period of time.
Yeah.
And that's I'm not okay with that. I want a little bit of competition here.
Well, it has to end sometime.
That's true.
But yeah, I've been excited about this week's games. Obviously, I was happy with the results. What were your thoughts about this week's games? Whichever side you want to start with.
Okay, we're gonna start in the East, and I just want to talk about how much the Cavs are rolling over, and how that doesn't make me happy. That makes me sad. It makes me sad to see them just roll over and die. And game one wasn't close from basically the tip off. And that was, I mean, I think on this podcast, we were talking about how we really thought that the Celtics were the better team. And
yes,
you know, and it never felt to me like that they were going to be the better team by this amount so far. Like, and they have really taken the Cavs as a team and destroyed their entire being, which is impressive and good, but also a little sad for competitive basketball.
I think that this is reflective of the mindset of the Cavaliers, in that I think the Cavaliers are not as good as they looked sweeping the Raptors, and they're probably not this bad either, but they have a little bit of the Andrew Bynum, Lamar Odom, Lakers losing to the Mavericks feel. Where they're just kind of like, fuck it. Like, we'll try our thing, and if it doesn't work, then we will, like, you know, flagrant foul you, basically.
Honestly, that switch just turned so quickly, though. I mean, they gave that to the Raptors, right? And now they're getting that from the Celtics. And what did it take for that switch to flip, right? Because it really just feels like they don't care. And that's the thing that's hard to understand, is like, when did it turn for them? When did they say, okay, we're getting punched in the teeth and we don't care?
Well, actually, I think this is just latent like workplace dysfunction.
Okay.
Where this is when you have a job and everybody knows each other too well, except for like the new interns who are Larry and Jordan running around.
Yeah.
And everyone's sort of disgruntled. And while everyone's doing well, when they're front running, they can still get along and they'll put effort in. But they're not the kind of team that's going to like they're not going to rally from a 3-1 deficit.
No.
They're also not sure if LeBron's even going to be there next year. Like, I'm sure that's starting to wear on people psychologically.
Absolutely. It's just like, is all it took, you know, a little bit of a team that just was not going to let them, you know, try. I don't know. It feels like the Celtics are squeezing the life out of them in a way that, like, yes, it does seem like they don't like each other. And I mean, it probably even felt like that, you know, a little bit at points in the Raptors series. But I mean, this to me is a bit shocking how poorly they played in game one and how much they rolled over in the second half of game two.
I think there's signs of this in the Pacers series as well, though. I think there's signs where they kind of I guess what I'm talking about when I talk about their dysfunction is they don't have relentless effort no matter what the score is.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like the Celtics and the Pacers, and basically probably like young teams or like successful teams like the Warriors, if they're down 12, if they're down even 20, they might still put in essentially like proper effort and give themselves a chance just through randomness or whatever to maybe get back into a game. the Cavaliers just have a lot of like people like visibly checking out body language and stuff. And I mean, I'm telling you, like, we got another highlight. It doesn't help when the dude doesn't run back on defense.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't help when your best player in game one, who, you know, didn't have a good game one.
No, he had a real bad game one.
Yeah, and then tries to frame it as if he's like, I'm just, you know, I'm the professor of basketball surveying.
you hated the glasses. You hated the suit.
No. I don't mind the glasses. I hated the, like, I hated the rundown of the play. As if it was like he's a basketball savant. Uh-huh. When there's like multiple NBA players that I've seen interviewed where they'll be like, they'll say like, I remember specific plays from like 7 years ago.
Yeah.
You know? And also, as I posted on Twitter, I thought it was pretty funny that he missed, like, he left out his bad plays in that
round. Yeah. Yeah. All of his defensive stuff, he is not yelling to the media.
Well, like, when he was like, well, Jason Tatum went 94 feet and hit a layup. Jason Tatum got a rebound off of a bad alley-oop attempt by LeBron.
Uh-huh.
Like he was like, oh, we missed a shot. It's like, no, you threw a turnover, like a bad turnover.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a critical game. Anyway, the Celtics are looking great.
I mean, they look really good.
An extension of the fact that, like, I am starting to like the Celtics, which is egregious for a Lakers fan. I am starting to like Marcus Smart.
You know what? When he went after J.R. Smith after the flagrant foul on Al Horford, he went at him in a way that was like, you know what? He just wanted to say something, be like, you can't do that, man. And J.R. Smith is like, get the fuck out of here. And J.R. Smith pushed him in his face, and he didn't like do anything else. Like, Marcus Smart was reserved and still tough, which was like, that's the tough line to tread, especially in the NBA where so many fights, you feel like neither player actually wants to fight. It felt like that could have gone in a way where, you know, we got a little physical, but it didn't. And it went in a way where that Marcus Smart showed like, hey, I'm standing up for my guy. Like, I think what you did was shitty. And I'm excited to let you know that.
Yeah. But I'm not specifically coming over to start a fist fight with you.
No. And that was kind of a cool thing.
He did through essentially like James Harden defense, which is he ran up to him with his arms down.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's funny how we can praise Marcus Smart for this, but we yell at James Harden. I don't know. I don't know what the difference is.
I'm saying that's the defense that Curry and Durant and them are playing on Harden right now in the other series.
Oh, yes. Okay. Got it.
They are specifically, when you watch him, when they guard him on drives, they're specifically like, they've got their arms all the way out as if they're like flying. Uh-huh. To just be like, ref, this is where my arm is. Look at my arm. Like, I'm not touching him at all.
What James has got to do is he's got to like gather through like beyond where those arms would be just so he can get that foul.
He has to swim through.
Yeah, it's a new technique he's got to pick up for game two tonight.
Wait, so what's the swim is going over and under is like a hook or something like that?
Yes, yeah, swim's over, yeah. Under is a hook.
Yeah, he's got a hook one, swim over the other.
I think we called it rip in high school. It was swim and rip were the two that we used, but terminology, you know, we know what we're talking about.
I mean, and isn't there one where you also like slap the guy in the face and then swim over him?
Usually the slap was going to be on a shoulder pad or something.
Okay. But I want to see James Harden doing this.
Yes, yeah. That's the way to go. I also want to talk about how good LeBron was in the first period. The first quarter of yesterday, it was ridiculous to watch him score 21 points in the first quarter, and just then, you know, what they couldn't do anything to stop him. Right? He was making 3-pointers in rhythm. It was a beautiful, beautiful first quarter from LeBron, and it's like, you know, I don't think it's a knock on him to say that he can't do that every quarter for the rest of the series, right? That's not a knock on anybody to say that they can't play absolute world-beating basketball 100% of the time.
That they can't score 84 points a game.
Yeah, something like that. If the measure of LeBron's success is can you score 84 points a game, then I think we're measuring him a little too harshly. It feels like the only way this Cavaliers team makes this a series is if LeBron has those quarters every other quarter and somebody else steps up. I mean,
and gets like 20 points from Kevin Love.
Yeah. God.
Gets a non-zero sum of points from J.R. Smith.
Hey, he got no points, but he did get one flagrant foul. And I did play in a fantasy basketball league where that was a category one.
I'm not going to, obviously, we know how we feel. I feel about LeBron. I'm not going to belabor LeBron in game one or two. I will just say that if you're LeBron stan, as they say, as the kids say, that's fine. Like, because that to me incorporates a sort of like irrational like for him that sort of trumps everything else. Uh-huh. But I will just say, if you're a rational fan of LeBron's, there has to be some case where he is able to be criticized at some point. That's all I'm saying. So like, and I'm not saying that game two is the game you would criticize him for, but in this playoffs, in game one, or, you know, they're not doing as well as they have in previous years. And he's not playing defense, often not getting back on defense. All I'm saying is there has to be a rubric by which he is allowed to be criticized. And it's either like, you know, that he may not make the finals against a team that is not stacked. He's not stacked up against a super team in this series.
No, this team is very good. This team feels like, I don't know, a Utah Jazz team with Carlos Boozer on it. You know, like,
yeah,
I, you know, in that, like, they seem like they're a good team. Like, God bless them. But like,
seem like the kind of team that LeBron has feasted on before.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
And
he is not feasting now.
Yeah. Against, I mean, this team. even after the first quarter yesterday, he did not feast on them.
No. He just scored 21 points in three quarters, which is, I don't know, still a better game than almost anybody else on the court had.
yeah.
Offensively.
So the other way to look at it is like this axis of LeBron doesn't have enough help, which I think if you go down too far that path, if you go down that path too far, I think you end up in the world of like, you know, at some point, do we say James Harden doesn't have enough help, that Russell Westbrook doesn't have enough help, that Giannis doesn't have enough help, that Anthony Davis doesn't have enough help? And maybe that's the way we look at all these teams that have like one dominant player. But I'm just, then there will be a point where like you have to like sort of excuse a bunch of other players too if this is what we're using. Uh-huh. And, or the sort of flip side of that is I was always told that he makes his teammates better. And I think I mentioned this at one point, but I'm pretty sure if you do statistical breakdowns of people that play with him and not when they leave or before they get there, that for the most part, people's stats go down when they play with him.
Yeah.
And so that thing I was saying earlier in their playoffs, like if they end up getting to the finals, it'll be because Kevin Love is back to like a 20 point per game player.
Yeah.
At which point it's kind of like, well, now they have LeBron and Kevin Love has scored 20 points in like four of the last five games. Mm-hmm. So now are you saying they don't have enough help to beat a team that doesn't have Kyrie and Gordon? You know what I mean? So like it just seems that there's always shifting goalposts to where it's like never, ever LeBron's fault. And that's all I say.
Yeah.
And I'll probably like try hard not to bring that up again in future episodes.
I don't mind like recognizing that kind of stuff because it feels like, yes, you know, I feel like LeBron is a likable guy who people want LeBron to succeed, and they recognize that his talents are something where he is like in a place that is so hard for other people to get to that like it's hard to take a look at somebody who's doing so well and say, okay, they're not doing what they need to be doing when they're doing so much. But you know, if you are just going to look at him in the, you know, in like a checklist of things that need to be done on a basketball court, he does not check all of the categories all the time, which is like saying, you know, nobody in the world checks all the categories all the time.
Yeah, I mean, but like, yeah, so like Harden plays horrible defense too. Mm-hmm. I would say Harden plays like visibly bad defense.
Yeah.
And LeBron will still get chased down blocks and stuff like that, but like, he is not playing a lot of defense. So at some point, you know, a knock on Harden as MVP is that his defense, I mean, Harden's defense is like blatantly bad sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like there becomes a point where it's like, you can't use the same rationales against one and not against someone else.
Yeah, totally. And I think the thing that I need to acknowledge is that even with all of the things that he's missing, which is a weird thing to say about LeBron James in my mind, he's still the best, I think, right now. In my mind, put it all together, and he's still the best player in the NBA. That's my take.
I think I could make a case if Golden State wins this and if Durant wins an MVP in the finals. I think I could make a case for Durant.
Yeah, I mean, I am not saying that these takes are undisputable. Just saying that's the thing that I think, you know, if we're going to say LeBron needs to do work on his defense, we need to acknowledge that he makes almost everything else happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that we probably are... Both you or neither you nor I are probably going to make a case for Harden being the best player in the league.
That's not happening on my side.
Okay. So I will say Celtics and Cavaliers, there is an element of all the Celtics have done essentially is hold serve. Yeah. So I do think that's maybe something to remember.
Yes. They have been garbage on the road this postseason.
It's very possible to come back to Boston 2-2.
Yeah.
I do think, again, not to be prisoners of the moment, I think the Cavaliers especially are a team that, like, when they look great, they look great. When they look bad, they look really bad.
Yes, yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that there's very much a chance. Like, I don't think J.R. Smith's going to zero out the rest of the series. I would hope not. I think they've got they still have a shot. They obviously need to win game three.
Yes, if they lose game three, it's over. If they lose game four, it's over, right?
If they're down 3-1.
Yeah, they're not coming back if they lose any one of the games at home. There's definitely a chance because, I mean, they played them, they beat them in the first half of that game, right?
Yeah.
There's a world where they don't shit the bed. There's a world where they have the ability to pull through and take Boston out at a game at home. It just doesn't feel like the most probable thing, you know, and we're amateur prognosticators. We're just trying to get it right. It just doesn't feel like the Cavs have what it takes to win a game in Boston.
I just think the Cavs, I think LeBron and Love and Kyrie were good enough to overcome the coaching gap. They don't have Kyrie this year, and I do think the coaching gap between Brad Stevens and Ty Lue is huge. I would be surprised. I think they will, like you said. I think if Boston's bad, they might hold serve in Cleveland. But yeah, if they are forced to win a game in the TD Garden, that's going to be tough.
Yeah,
I will make this bold prediction. I especially don't think the Cavaliers can win this series if they lose two more games. I think that's going to be a difficult deficit to come back from.
Yeah. You know what? We're here for bold takes on Rule of Threes.
I think that is a bold take. Yeah, I'm pretty sure in NBA history, no team has come back from a 0-4 deficit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, this is the year to put that to the test.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone can do it, LeBron can do it. By the way, we're no closer to knowing where he's going next year. Like,
no, nothing.
Like, I actually don't think anyone even has a good idea. Like, no one has an idea where it's like that fits. And I almost wonder if he feels like, God, I don't have a lot of great choices at this point.
Yeah, this is very funny. He just is like, I don't know where to go. I'm just going to retire.
Yeah.
Well, that's not happening. Let us be clear on that. That is 100% not happening, but that'd be funny as hell.
Oh, by the way, can I just say, I think we have resolved the, does Kobe respect LeBron? You know, does he see him as a peer thing? Cause he also put out a detail episode on LeBron.
Yeah.
I don't know if you watched that.
I think it's been resolved and I am not coming out the winner here.
Yeah. Yeah. He clearly sees LeBron as somebody that he can coach. And the detail episode for LeBron was pretty interesting, actually. It was basically two main takeaways of it was that he should start with deeper low post position early in the game and try to get fouls on people. Uh-huh. And also just that, like, he was just saying, like, I'm just working too hard. I need to catch the ball deeper and just, like, take one dribble and just go to the rim. Because he has a good point. He was like, there were multiple plays where he was like guarded by Terry Rozier or somebody like that. Where it's just like, just walk to walk the low post position. Yeah, just literally just go where you want to go and you'll get position. The other thing he pointed out was there were a couple like really good moves that LeBron did. These are in regular season games against the Celtics. And he was like, I don't want to do that move in the first quarter. You know, I don't want to. Then they know I can do that move and they'll be ready for it. I want to save that move until the fourth quarter.
Okay.
And he was like, I have all these other, you know, I can just do a mid-range pull-up. I can walk them back and go, you know, just drive for a foul or something. But like my like fancy moves, essentially, like I don't need to reveal that to a player early in the game. And I thought that was interesting. The idea that Kobe like has specific moves that he's like, I'm going to wait until like 4 minutes left before I do that one, I thought was interesting.
Yeah. It seems like such a weird, that seems like such a weird thing for me, because who of these guys isn't watching tape on LeBron to know what his moves are? Like who doesn't know what LeBron's moves are at this point?
I think it's,
like, what new moves has LeBron brought to the table?
Well, this specifically one was just a like drop step, like spin to the baseline. That was
like a counter. Just, he's doing counters in the beginning of the game.
Yeah, exactly. It was like surprising. It was a surprising move that, it was a move that used the element of surprise when there was no, like, he hadn't done the first move that it would counter against.
Okay. I guess that makes sense. It feels to me like, you know, counters are there to, you know, like a fastball change up, you know, you get them used to something, you do another thing.
Right.
But if you do the counter, you change up fastball works just as well. You know, you want unpredictability. That's the key, and to get people in a place where they can't make a good decision. But for to have Kobe say, like, you got to save your counter to the fourth quarter, like, use your counter when it's going to work. Like, that's the most important thing. Like, yes, you want to have, you know, good stuff for the fourth quarter, but the points in the first quarter count just as much as the points in the fourth quarter.
I think that part of it was about energy conservation.
Okay.
So some of this was about, like, I want to just take my mid-range pull-up jumper here because it's early in the game. It's like in the library of things. Yes, maybe the pull-up jumper happens at the end of the game, but like early in the game, it doesn't cost him much energy to do, and it might, you know. There's been other details where Kobe will talk about just taking a jumper here, and this is very classic Kobe, not necessarily caring about making it, but just being like, I can take this at any point. So like, now you have to worry.
You
got to
guard me there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, speaking of like countering, I was just thinking about, speaking of like not being too boring with your offense, how about that ISO ball by the Houston Rockets?
let me just say this about Houston Rockets ISO ball. Oh, it is tough to watch sometimes. I do not enjoy watching it for a long period of time.
It feels a little bit like pickup ball when there's two people like a lot better than everybody else.
Yeah, basically everybody I play with, anybody who's better than me.
We're always the guys just on the side being like, I hope a rebound comes this way.
I'm going to make a cut. You don't want me to make a cut? Oops, yeah. Too bad.
Actually, I have that experience a lot in pickup games where it's like, I make a cut, and they're like, get out of here. Or you come to set a screen, and they're like, no.
What are you doing, dude? You know I'm not going to the left. I'm going to the right.
Know that I'm not going to participate in a pick and roll with you. it also reminds me of, like, I feel like that's probably how they play their summertime hoodie mellow all the pros in a 24-hour fitness gym game. I feel like that's how they play.
It's just 20% of the time you get to do your own little ISO thing.
And I guess like you could say that like this, that the Russell Westbrook Durant offense kind of functioned like this too.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this speaks to the, like, last offseason, it was like, well, how are these two guys going to play together? And the answer is, well, probably a lot of iso ball. Like, maybe that's not like a genius offense. Maybe it's just what we can put together in one offseason. And maybe, well, next season they'll have something else.
Did you hear what D'Antoni was saying after the game?
Where he's like, this is who we are?
Kind of? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not – it feels like that's exactly what they're trying to do. And it's just – it feels more – it feels less like a game plan that is like, you know, you got your range of variances that you expect from your outcomes, right? And over the course of a game, you know, you've got a range of variances that you think you're going to be in. And it seems like this iso ball has a wide range of variances. Like, it'll either go real bad or either go real good or somewhere in the middle. But it feels like the kind of offense that is run by the Warriors, who have been good at offense for 4 years now, is something where their like range of variances has a higher average of that of what the Rockets are doing with their iso ball.
Yeah, and I guess, you know,
even though like maybe the Rockets' total capacity might be actually greater, you know,
yeah,
like
the
range is larger, it just feels like their average range is going to be lower, and that over the course of the series they're going to get exposed.
Well, because their top is a 50-point quarter, you know,
and that was intense, especially because, you know, when you go back and you watch that quarter, it doesn't really feel like a 50-point quarter. Uh-huh. It felt like okay, this is just what's happening. They're just making a lot of their shots. That was the wild thing about it to me, was that it felt like it was, you know, a little routine. And here's the thing: it's not routine because it only happened that once.
I think that the variance you're talking about happens sort of because, like, and again, whenever I talk about offense, I really don't care where the shots go in. I would love if I could have somebody, I would just do it and give it to somebody else. I would love to see a game where every offensive play ends before you see whether the ball goes in or not. And then try to figure out who won.
Yeah.
Because I'm so the thing about the Golden State offense is, like, I think they just get better shots in general, but they also have more opportunities for shots throughout the shot clock.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a lot of Rockets possessions that there's one player searching for a shot for about 17 to 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And then either taking it or awkward bailout pass or something, like, where it just doesn't feel there's a flow to, like, I feel like a Golden State possession, there could be a good shot at 3 seconds in, or they make you run around for a long time and then Sean Livingston gets a, like, give and go dunk.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's where that variance you're talking about comes in.
Yes. Yeah. Their expected result is higher. Like, you look at the games in your game that you're looking at, and you would say, okay, that team has less variance and their average is higher. It feels like with the Rockets, they're trying their best to do what's strong for these players and what is going to work over time for these players. It just doesn't feel like it's something that is going to, you know, result in their eventual winning against this specific Warriors team.
Well, interestingly, Eric Gordon after the game was like, we can't run ISO against a good defensive team. And I'm like, it's a little late to realize that.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, like, you're playing against an excellent defensive team, so
yeah.
I kind of don't understand why you're saying this in public. Because it's not really actionable at this point, Eric. Like,
yeah,
I think this is probably the offense you have for the rest of the season.
That's the bummer.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, another thing that people aren't really thinking about as much in this series or talking about is that this is a matchup between two defensive powerhouses.
Yes.
Like, we look at their offense and we look at how much they win games by, and we say, okay, well, these are two teams that are fire throwers. And yes, they're fire throwers, but they're also fire stoppers.
Will say that I'm pretty familiar with the Golden State offense, and I mean defense, and not very familiar with Houston's defense.
Houston's defense is really good, and they pester you, and then they've been able to force people into taking bad shots against them all year. And, you know, this is a huge, huge test for them. And, you know, the toughest problem on the court is Kevin Durant for them,
I think there's two toughest problems. One is Durant, and one is whoever Harden is guarding. Because Harden like put up some points on Curry for sure.
Oh yeah.
But like for his physical talents, like when Harden is trying to guard Curry, like that's pretty embarrassing as well.
Yeah.
But yes, every team's going to have a hard time with Durant. If you know the Houston defense better than I do, like what do you think they can do against Durant?
So really the thing that they can do against Durant, you can't do against the Warriors, right?
Right.
You try to trap him and get the ball out of his hands. It's just not a good play against the Warriors because of how fantastic they are at passing the ball and finding the open person.
My other question is, you know, essentially the Warriors run an offense that no one else runs, which is like very few pick and rolls. Like they have more pick and rolls in the playoffs, but like, so I wonder if, and this is just guessing, if Houston is an excellent defense against pick and rolls in general, what happens when a lot of like the offense is motion offense where one of the options is Kevin Durant, who can then run a pick and roll and ISO if he wants to.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things is it feels like that a lot of their like really good defensive players are less like, let's follow a guy around guys and more let's stand in front of a guy guys like Tucker and Mbamute and Ariza. Like it feels like out of those three, maybe Ariza's the guy who will chase you around a screen and stick to your hip.
Right.
But Tucker's a guy who's going to bully ball you. Mbamute is a guy who's going to try to just keep you shut down. And it feels like their defensive setup is more set up to like really stop those individual players that they're against. And when you've got as much motion in your offense as the Warriors do, it doesn't feel like the Rockets are going to be able to keep their defensive scheme as solid as they have in against other teams.
Yeah. I guess the issue is also like, so even if you had a Scottie Pippen on your team that you could just put on Kevin Durant and say, like, we're going to try to stop him with this guy. Because of this motion, he's probably not going to stay on him very long. Or it's going to get distorted to the point where he can find a seam or he can get, you know, switched onto somebody else. But also, like, I was just thinking, like, who in the league is I'll put him on Kevin Durant and neutralize him defensively at this point? The only one I can think of is maybe Draymond, if you had Draymond on a separate team.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing that stops Kevin Durant is people finding out his burner account. So you got to every game, you got to find out his burner account and then like show it to him, and then he'll freak out and he'll have to go back to the locker room, create a new Twitter account, and then he can come back in the game. That's the tough part, is that, you know, it's tough to find those burners if you don't know how to look for them.
Oh, by the way, shout out to Chris Paul, who like legit had a bad game one and then padded his points in garbage time with like 8 points. He was like, he had like 15 points or so. There was a point where his stat line was bad. 3 assists total for the game. And also conversely to where we were saying like, well, you know, the Celtics, all they've done is hold serve. My feeling about the Warriors being able to go in and like it's just a disaster having to try to hold your home court against them in the first 2 games. Like, they don't give a shit if they're playing on the road. And I think, as you mentioned, the Rockets' home court is not an intimidating home court to play on.
No. I mean, it felt a little more raucous in game one than I was expecting it to, but it still didn't feel as, you know, like, it certainly didn't feel as crazy as Boston has felt those last 2 games.
No, but I mean, Boston is, like, historic.
Yeah. Did you say they were chanting, fuck you, JR?
Fuck you, JR, yes.
That is quite a chant. I will say this: those Boston fans, they are loud, annoying, and oh man, it reminds me why I am not a Celtics fan.
Oh yeah. Also, in real life, they're racist.
Yeah, yes.
Like Boston, the most liberal racist town in the world.
Yeah. Hey, this is America.
Do we have any feeling like which series do you think has a better chance of being competitive?
I'm going to go with the Warriors Rockets series.
Okay.
Because of how sad I felt watching the Cavs play. Just, I mean, you know, this playoffs for me has been just an eventual deepening of my sadness. You know?
Oh, this playoffs is getting better and better as it goes on.
That is not saying that the playoffs are not good, and sadness can be a good thing as well. But like feeling so good about the Toronto Raptors, feeling so good about the Philadelphia 76ers, and just watching them slowly fall and fade, and know that, you know, we are all just trying as hard as we can, but sometimes we don't get to try hard enough. You know, I mean, I just like, that's the sadness I feel now watching the Cavs play in this round.
I will say that I think that that is something that happens. That's something that just happens with sports. And I do weirdly feel like that stuff fades away more easily than whatever the high points of this, you know, go round are. Like from last year, I basically remember from last year, Kevin Durant's pull up 3-point, you know, in game 5 or whatever.
Yeah, the one that sealed the deal.
Yeah, like that's basically what I remember from last year's playoffs. I don't even remember who played who in rounds 1 and 2. And I certainly don't remember that past, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever. Like, and I feel like it's relatively, I actually think it's healthy that that happens. And then like, you sort of like dust yourself off and like, I wouldn't feel bad if I was a Sixers fan. I wouldn't feel bad. No matter what happens with the Celtics, they'll be great. I would feel sad if I was a Cavaliers fan, I think. And a Raptors fan. You've sort of like emotionally latched onto some teams that are like in bad situations.
I have made some weird emotional choices. Yeah, I'll admit that.
Like it almost feels like it'd be better to be a Knicks fan right now than a Raptors fan.
The Knicks did not win the lottery, and I tell you what, a lot of Knicks fans real sad about it.
Well, Knicks fans are always weird about the draft. And like, New York sports fans are always weird about all the drafts in all the sports. Like, did they all happen in New York, by the way? But like,
no, some do, some don't.
It's just, there's always, like, I've never seen towns that are so, like, where your cabbie cares about, like, who the Giants took in the 4th round or whatever. You know, like, they're always just... There's so much concern about potential in New York and about like fixing the franchise fast.
Yes, because tell you what, a lot of those New York franchises need to get fixed very fast.
What I don't get is they're always talking about like how, you know, there's so much pressure to play in New York and they're always expecting so much from the teams. But like if you're a Knicks fan, it's not realistic to have expected much over the last like since Allen Houston played for the team. Like, it's been a long time. You have Frankie Smokes and Kristaps.
You're telling me that it wasn't realistic to expect Amari Stoudemire and Carmelo Anthony and Phil Jackson to take them to the next level?
It was not realistic. Hey, can we talk a little bit about the draft?
Yes, we absolutely can. Before we do that, I do want to, like, go into our new fun game segment.
New fun game.
Do when we've got a mobile podcast.
We need a theme song for this.
Okay. All right. I'll come up with one and we'll record it. We'll make it happen.
And go ahead.
What jersey am I wearing right now?
Okay. Do I get any clues?
I do give you a clue at first. This player was not drafted.
Ooh.
This is an undrafted player.
Knicks, John Starks.
Ooh, that's a good call, but no.
Was he not bagging groceries at one point?
I don't remember. I can't remember if John Starks was drafted or not.
This player was not drafted.
Yeah.
Is he still in the league?
He is still in the league.
Ooh, goodness.
Yeah.
This is not Rudy from Notre Dame.
No, it is not. It is not a Rudy from Notre Dame.
Will it give it away if you tell me sort of the nature of how he got onto a team?
Well, he was really good in the summer league and was picked up after a really good summer league where he really like did very well in the summer league and then got picked up by a team that he didn't play summer league with.
Oh lord. This is not like Quinn Cook.
No, this is not like Quinn Cook. No.
Oh, because Quinn Cook played for like Louisville or something. Or I don't know.
Quinn Cook played for Duke.
Okay. So he played for that mom and pop homeschool Duke.
Yeah. Yeah. What, with Chef Krzyzewski? Chef Krzyzewski?
Yes.
Something like that?
Okay. I need one more clue.
Okay. All right. His contract was traded from the team that I am wearing the jersey of to your favorite team.
His contract was traded?
Yes. And he was traded as well, but it was a contract move.
Luol Deng?
Ooh, no. Luol Deng signed with your favorite team.
Wait, did Luol Deng also play for Duke?
Luol Deng did... Oh, fuck, I can't remember.
Wait, I have to look that up.
But Luol Deng was super drafted.
Yeah. I feel like I'm only guessing Duke players at this point. Luol Deng did play for Duke.
Yes.
Traded to the Lakers, I'm assuming.
Yes, yeah. From the team where I'm wearing this jersey of this player, and it is that team that traded him to the Los Angeles Lakers.
Oh, boy. Is it Adam Morrison?
Ooh, no, it is not Adam Morrison.
He went to Gonzaga.
He was drafted third.
Yes, that's right. Oh, so this is someone that fell out of rounds one and two.
Yes.
Went and had a good workout, got onto a summer league team.
Yes.
Impressed summer league, got signed to a team.
Yes.
And then had his contract traded to the Lakers.
Yes, but that was many years down the road.
Oh, okay. And he's still active?
He is still active.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I think I have to give up.
No. I'm going to give you a couple
give me another clue. Okay, good.
He not only played for Houston, he also played for the New York Knicks.
World Be Free?
No. I gave you two teams because you didn't know that the team that traded him to LA was Houston.
Uh-huh. Let's see. He played for Houston and he played for the Knicks.
Yes.
So wait, which team did he sign on to after summer league?
The Warriors.
Oh my God. This is impossible. This is a journeyman. Probably a player I really like, the more it sounds. Like a Popeye Jones style.
Yeah.
Player that's everywhere.
And he played with the Lakers for 1 year before signing with the Charlotte Hornets.
Oh, my God.
And then signing with the Brooklyn Nets.
So, wait. He played for the Brooklyn Nets. This is not Jason Collins.
No, it is not Jason Collins.
He
currently plays for the Brooklyn Nets.
Oh, my goodness. By the way, I want a Jason Collins.
Yes.
I want to collect basically all the gay jerseys I can.
Yes,
so
of course.
Michael Sam jersey, LA Rams.
John Amici.
John Amici. Don Amici.
Don Amici, the famous Mafia League player.
Yep, and whatever Ralph guy, the other guy in Trading Places. Don Amici. Yes.
Okay, all right.
I'm stumped.
No, you got this. He went to Harvard.
Oh, of course. Well, wait, now why do you describe Jeremy Lin as having his contract traded to the Lakers?
Because that was a move where they were trying to get off of money so they could sign Dwight Howard.
Yes, of course, one of my favorite players. I didn't realize he's played for this many teams.
Yeah, he's truly been a journeyman. So I'm wearing my Houston Rockets retro Jeremy Lin jersey.
Oh, excellent. Houston Rockets, always ready to sign an Asian player. Because of
they fucked New York with that contract. It was a poison pill where they the first 2 years at $5 million each and then the third year at $15 million. So they traded off of that $15 million
So that was he was at the Knicks and then went to the Rockets.
Warriors, Knicks, Rockets, Lakers, Hornets.
Right. Brooklyn. Well, because that was the year that he had Linsanity. And then the Knicks were basically like, whether or not it was because of Carmelo, were like, get rid of this guy or something. They were like, we'll let you test the market kind of thing.
Yes. Yeah. And it was like, was so mad.
And it was like, well, I went and tested the market and the market's pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because I remember the Knicks fans, speaking of insane fans, feeling like, oh, he's betrayed us or whatever. First of all, I remember Carmelo not being particularly friendly to him.
No, he was not, because he took all of Carmelo's juice.
Yeah, although Carmelo was, injured when Linsanity started.
Yeah, I think. and then Jeremy Lin got injured, and then Carmelo didn't do as well as Jeremy Lin, and people started booing Carmelo.
Yeah, as they should. As they should ever since his Syracuse days.
Well, just how amazing was Linsanity when it happened? Truly, that was like, I was so engaged with watching those games. When he scored that buzzer beater, I sound like a mom. When he made the buzzer beater against Toronto, and he just like hugs Landry Fields as he's walking, as he's like jumping down the court, and people are going nuts.
Yep.
I was watching that game live, and I was like, this is insane.
Yeah.
How could this have happened?
I think that they're, first of all, it's because of God. And God wanted that to happen. It's weird because he's a very devout Christian. And I wonder, there might be something in his worldview that's just like, well, God wanted me to have Linsanity. Like, God wanted me to have a moment. And, like, I'm not meant to necessarily have more of that. Because, you know, he's a very solid player, but, like, hasn't really shown that, like, he can do that again.
He's dealt with injuries the rest of his career pretty much.
He certainly has. But I also feel like I wonder if some element of that was a little bit of just like, I don't even know who this guy is that I'm guarding. It's a regular season game. There was an element of just like, who is this? How many points?
There's a little bit of that, but there's also like the way that he got to the rack and he just bulldozed his way to the rack was something that like, you know, you should be able to defend somebody like that unless they're just better than you. And for those 27 games that he was there, he was better than people. And that was awesome.
I will say that I think I would be surprised if there is ever any especially an Asian American player in the league. I'll be surprised if there's ever one that's soft. Because I would guess that the path that somebody like Jeremy Lin would have to take to get to the league would require a lot of like hard fouls. Like just relentless, like you have to drive to the rim and you're going to get knocked down. I just think I'd be surprised if there's ever, you know, there are stereotypes about Asian people. But I think like hard nosed, like there is something about like proving yourself through sort of throwing your body at something that is part of like being an Asian person, I will say. Like, nice. I was only recently reading about like Chinese history, and like a lot of Chinese history is about essentially like having so many people that they throw manual labor at a lot of problems. And weirdly, I find myself having like that thought sometimes, not throwing like other people at things, but like I have the ability to like grind through, like this is by no means an equivalent comparison, but if I have to like type 5,000 phone numbers into an Excel spreadsheet, I am able to like just sit down and do that. Where it's just like there is like this like work ethic thing that like kicks in. And so for that reason, like I feel like anybody that has gotten to the league with a profile like Jeremy Lin's, like I'd be surprised if he ever was not like a strong guy that can drive to the rim and like just sort of bulldoze people. That feels very, very Asian to me.
Nice. Yeah, I got you.
Draft.
Let's talk about the draft.
I was looking at this draft order. And here's who we got. We got Phoenix Suns, number one.
Yes.
Sacramento Kings, number two.
Yes.
Atlanta Hawks, number three.
Yep.
Memphis Grizzlies, number four. Dallas, yeah. Orlando, Chicago, Cleveland, New York, Philly, Charlotte, LA Clippers, and the Denver Nuggets. Great. And I was looking at the list, and I thought, I'm okay with this lottery. I think that these teams need picks. And I know we've talked a lot about tanking and, you know, how do we fix the draft and stuff? But to me, I'm like, this is a decent set of teams that needs a talent infusion for the years to come.
Yeah. I mean, it's like all these bad teams that are in the lottery need better players.
Yeah. Well, but it's like, it's one of the, this is a year that I'm like, I don't see, this wouldn't be a year that you could convince me that there's something wrong with the system.
Yes. I get, like, it's not like the Celtics got a top three pick.
Yes, exactly. The Celtics are going to be, like, it's going to be tough being a Lakers fan. but, like, here's another thing. I was reading a mock draft. They had Marvin Bagley going at number 3 to Atlanta Hawks.
Okay.
And I was like, didn't Marvin Bagley already play for the Atlanta Hawks? And I was thinking of Marvin Harrison. Not Marvin Harrison. Marvin Williams.
Okay, yeah. Yes.
Who,
yeah, like, Marvin Harrison played for the Colts, and now he's a slumlord in wherever he lives. Which
Marvin Harrison is a guy, like, if you don't pay his rent, he pulls a gun on you.
Yes, yeah, that's the guy. That's him. That's fun.
Yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes people don't pay rent. You got to get that rent.
That's true. That is a very, very true thing.
Do you care about any of these teams? Like, first of all, if we have a hard enough time picking who's going to win playoff series, the idea of trying to pick who's going to be the best pick in a draft is impossible.
I will say this. Yeah. I know nothing about the draft. And here's where our draft expertise is going to come in. In July, when we go to Summer League, we're gonna check some Summer League people while we're there, and we'll have some hot takes.
Oh, good. Yeah, like the only person I've really watched, I've like watched a little bit of DeAndre Ayton. I've watched very little of Luka Doncic. I haven't watched hardly any Marvin Bagley. I've watched a little bit of like Michael Porter Jr., who I was like, this kid's great, and then apparently like he's not. Or something.
He got injured, and you know he's still projected to be a top 10 pick. But
yeah, the thing I read was him going to Orlando, maybe. But basically, it seems like for the top pick, it's between DeAndre Ayton and Luka Doncic. I don't really care. I don't really care between the Phoenix Suns and the Sacramento Kings, although those are both Lakers division rivals, right?
Yeah, we're gonna be playing this kid for a long time. We're gonna be
playing both of these kids, DeAndre Ayton, and we're gonna have a lot of Ayton. Lonzo, Doncic matchups.
Yep.
But I just wanted to say that, like, I like the idea that these teams, like, are getting draft picks. And that it's not another, like, well, the Sixers have another, like, number one pick, like, 3 years in a row, or the Cavaliers getting so many number one picks in a row. Yeah. The Cavaliers have number 8. Which probably is not enough to like get like some world changing player to replace LeBron if he decides to leave. And the Clippers at 12 and 13, you know, they are like essentially like here's a question for you. I know you love talking about the Clippers. do you think they're just a broken franchise until they get rid of Doc?
I mean, I think they're a broken franchise until the sun stops emitting heat.
Fair enough.
I got nothing nice to say about the Clippers. From in arena experience to the way that they run anything, I hate the Clippers. Come at me. I want to get serious, I think that's a good point. I don't like Doc Rivers, and I think that the sooner they're rid of him, the better they will be in the long term. So keep Doc Rivers until the sun goes out.
And when he quits, keep Austin on the team as well.
Exactly. Heck, hire Austin to be the next coach, GM, / owner, I don't care, of the Los Angeles Clippers.
Yeah, we had a nice little, like, 5 to 7 years where people thought coach GMs was a good idea.
Oh, yeah.
And that is over.
Well, I mean, don't worry. The next place LeBron goes, he's going to be coach player. So.
Yep. You know what? Maybe he goes to Detroit, replaces Stan.
Yo, we have just figured it out. He is coach player GM of the Detroit Pistons. He goes in there and he shows Dan Gilbert how to run something in Detroit because Dan Gilbert doesn't know how to do that normally.
Oh boy.
That'd be very funny if he went to if he went to just Detroit and was like, really, screw you, Dan Gilbert. I'm going to make sure that the Cavs lose to me in your city.
I don't know that that would outweigh the other moribund prospects of playing in Detroit, but it probably would be worth it for that little. But, you know, speaking again about like his lack of like great destinations, there's a possibility like that as is the case with most players in their 15th through 20th seasons, that their careers get depressing you know, like, I'm trying to think of careers who didn't get that. Like, Kareem's career was, I guess, not that depressing, even though he as a person seems depressing. but you know what I mean? Like, that's just the natural cycle of things. So, like, maybe Detroit is a good place for him.
Yeah, let's kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah. Casey, I got a tech rehearsal.
Great.
I will say again, if you're in Orlando, come see Thrones the Musical Parody. Let's plug our shows, Casey. What shows do you have this weekend?
Oh man. So this Thursday, we got Logan Everett's Yearbook, my American Girl doll themed improv team.
that is a real thing.
It's a real thing. Logan Everett, we host a show every first and third Thursday at the Moving Arts Theater in Silver Lake on Hyperion at 8 p.m. And we got a good show coming up. We got Family Loves Michael and two other fun teams whose names are escaping me right now, but we're really excited.
I think you have TJ and Dave and the Stepfathers.
Yes. Big Black Car.
And Nichols and May.
Yes. Yeah.
How do you know Big Black Car?
Yeah.
cool, man. We should definitely check in probably on the weekend.
Yeah.
I would say I'll be surprised if by like Monday, like if at least one of the series will be over. Like pretty soon.
I do not think that any of the series will be over by Monday because Game 3 is
isn't there one on Friday? Friday or Saturday?
No, Game 3 is on Saturday, Sunday. Games this weekend. So there's no game on Thursday or Friday.
So is there a game on Monday, though?
There is a game on Monday. There will be games Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Okay. So you're saying that there will be a sweep? Because that you're saying that then that Boston will sweep Cleveland.
Well, remember, I still got Warriors in five.
That's true.
So that would mean they'd be ending like Wednesday or Thursday of next week. I think we both said like Celtics in six, right?
I said Celtics in seven.
I said Celtics in six.
Yeah.
I'm going to say I don't care, but let's talk. Let's talk again after like at least a couple more games. This is an unacceptable gap between games.
Yeah, the Thursday-Friday off is very weird.
When you get used to Thursday nights being a very fun NBA night.
NBA night, baby.
Throughout the year, inside the NBA, throughout like the whole regular season. And so for Thursdays to not like, I remember, so I have a show on Thursday nights when I'm in LA and like, I love coming home from the show and like coming home and there's often one game's done. You've got great highlights. You're in the middle of a West Coast game. You've got the boys talking on TV. Like that's a fun thing to come home to on Thursday. So it seems unacceptable to like then turn Thursday into like the day off.
Yeah. It's weird to me as well. Yeah. Last thing I want to say on the podcast before we head off, Stefan sent us another email.
Oh, good.
He remembered the thing that he wanted to talk about that he disagreed with strongly. He said that he disagreed that I say that all NBA fans hate Chandler Parsons. and he sent me a very, like, I guess it's supposed to be sexy picture of Chandler Parsons, because he does modeling. But also, like, I can't get into Chandler Parsons just because, like, he looks too much like a doof. I don't. Not into it.
He looks like he's like third cousins with Tyler Hansbrough. Maybe.
You know what? I'm gonna roast Stefan here because I'm gonna think that Chandler Parsons kind of looks a little bit like Stefan. So maybe he's just got an inflated sense of self. So we're gonna say this.
Yeah. Go ahead.
He. If you want to say that the reason that. People like Chandler Parsons is because he's good looking. Stefan, you're not that good looking.
Okay. I would say that maybe not all NBA fans hate Chandler Parsons. I would say that it's probably split into two groups: people that hate Chandler Parsons and people that don't know who Chandler Parsons is.
Okay, yeah, I agree. I'm in. I'm all in on that.
All right, man. We will see you next time.
Sounds good.
And by the way, send us an email at ruleofthreespodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, we'll put it up here at the end. We will roast you.
Oh yeah, just like we roasted Stefan. Or take that, Stefan.
Take that.
All right, man.
All right, see you, dude.
All right, bye.